Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
This morning with David Slack. Kia ora, David. How are you?
I'm very well, Rachel. Thank you very much. I was just thinking, that Sting's just about as old as me.
It's a bit of an icon, that Sting there. Hey, thanks for popping into the studios today to have a bit of a rundown on what's been happening in politics in Aotearoa and a bit more broadly as well. Shall we start with talking a little bit about the kind of the carbon chat of the moment, which is the clean car scheme, or the clean car discount. It's been called various different things. I think it's quite a good initiative about sort of, I guess, taxing cars that have high emitters of CO2 and sort of using the money from that to make it easier to bring more cleaner vehicles into the country. What do you think about this, David?
I absolutely applaud the sentiment. And, you know, what you keep seeing here is that this administration, if it moves forward, it moves forward when the Greens decide to try an initiative. And I think this is a good one. Of course, you can find faults in it, but obviously the National Party opposition are finding every fault they conceivably can, and that's their job.
Mm.
But you're potentially presented here with making the perfect the enemy of the good. In other words, because you say, here, this isn't quite right, this mm-hmm. won't work exactly as you want, we shouldn't do anything at all. And the larger proposition surely is, God, do something.
Mm.
Just try and move things, because there is no question, and they say this themselves, oh, yeah, we're all in favour of doing things to mitigate carbon emissions, so mm-hmm. We'd like to see something, just not this. Trouble is, and you certainly see this with particularly Paula Bennett, but to a lesser extent other National MPs as well, they will forever refrain this. We want to see change, just not this way.
Mm.
And at a certain point, you've got to say, actually, you just really want to hang on to just the way things are, don't you, bro? You know, you want to still drive Ford Ranger. You still want to have things the way they are and hope that things will get better. Because, of course, nobody wants climate change. Of course, nobody wants catastrophe.
Mm.
But also, you know, we've kind of got this, everybody wants to be John Kennedy, but nobody wants to be shot.
Yeah.
You
know? Fair point.
Very good analogy. One. Wow.
It is an interesting one, though, because I guess there is also a point that it is going to maybe affect rural communities in a way that other demographics aren't going to be so affected by. But I'm struggling to see how we can mitigate that. How do we sort of make it easier, I guess, in a sense, or cheaper, or less sort of targeted of those groups? You know, do you see there being possibilities in how this could be more beneficial?
Well, I see this as what as catch-up, really. You know, if you look at other more determined economies like, oh, I don't know, Germany, for example, there's already been a great deal more effort to push us towards carbon neutral activity. And that is actually, that kind of work, and also in states like California, is how we come to see this technology having moved at the pace it has, because there's a recognition, actually, we need to find some way to replace internal combustion engines with something that is sustainable. And so these things exist. But here, we have made it really hard for people to vote with their wallet, because you've got to have a very fat one.
Yeah.
Now, if you can tilt things a little and make it a bit more palatable for people to make the switch, that's all to the good, I would suggest. And we've sort of got a grab bag of things there to address, and I'm missing out that point you made a little a moment or two ago about unduly burdening the rural community. I don't know. Sometimes, if you choose to be in a particular place or time or enterprise, the burden falls on you more heavily. You simply have to live with that.
This is an interesting thing about the whole trying to mitigate climate change or fight against it, is that is there an easy way to do it? Probably not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, maybe the question's rather than how do we make this easier, but how do we support the people that are going to be hit the hardest?
Yeah, totally.
Because I think it is going to be a hard thing. There are going to be sacrifices made, and people are going to have to change, because otherwise, what's the alternative?
Do you do nothing at all?
Yeah.
So it's maybe like, what's the proposal for supporting the communities that it's going to hit harder? Like, how do you
But you also have to ask, just how heavy an imposition is this? Mm-hmm. Is this something that is going to send you to the wall? Which, in fact, was a policy decision that was made in the mid-80s when you had a new Labour administration that said, the way we're running farming economically is unsustainable. We're going to take away all of the economic supports that have built up over the last 20 years. That was absolutely catastrophic mm-hmm. for people. And people took their lives then. Yeah. We're talking about a $3,000 tax on a ute. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the same scale.
Yeah,
And we're talking about making a movement towards something that might move us in the longer term to all running sustainable vehicles, as they're doing elsewhere in the world in great volume. And actually, probably you're going to see a point, you know, and I think it's, I forget who, maybe CEO of Volvo said a couple of years ago, we see a point in only 3 or 4 years away where there'll be no internal combustion engine, or certainly on their, mm-hmm. in the Volvos anyway.
Yeah. Mm.
That's where we're going.
Yeah.
So, you know, at a certain point, you might be stuck with your very shiny internal combustion engine that vehicle that cost you 50, 60, 80 grand, and they're not making them anymore. And
then
you
know, start,
how about you get ready now and start making the move?
Yeah.
Also, they're really great to drive.
Yeah.
Why do you hate this so much? We're not asking you to subject yourself to misery.
I think it's interesting as well because there's also certain, you know, parts of this discussion has been about New Zealand being behind the curve a little bit and catching up to this. You know, I was actually quite shocked to discover that we were one of three countries that didn't have fuel efficiency standards, basically. And now that this is being brought in, it sort of shocks me that we haven't had that in place already. You know, these are things that you seem fairly basic, at least from the outside, you know, when you're looking at it.
We've been weird about cars all the way along. For the long, long time, we had an import protection system so that you actually, that people built, this might sound improbable, but I swear I'm not making it up. People would make their cars fully assembled. They would then deconstruct them, send them in crates, and we had assembly plants here that put them back together so that you had a completely built-up car that had been
made here,
so that you then bought in New Zealand. So you paid way more for your car than anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
And this was all, you know, with the intention that there would be jobs.
Mm-hmm,
you know, that's what you were doing. You had assembly plants in Seaview and Petone and out in Porirua, mm-hmm. and they were great employers. But it meant that everybody paid twice as much as the rest of the world for their cars. So we switched from that to that aforementioned revolution in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
And one of the things was that changed was you could import cars. So then what happened was we started buying all Japan's old discarded shit cars. And so suddenly everybody was able to buy a cheap Jap car instead of a new Suzuki.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a good thing from the point of view of young men like me who were otherwise tearing their limbs off on motorbikes. But outside of that, it meant that we were right. The national fleet was
very
shitty
old
and dirty and emitting badly.
Mm,
and that's where we still sit today.
Yeah, yeah. I think we do have one of the oldest car fleets in the OECD.
Do.
Yeah, it is, you know, we are a bit behind the curve on this. It's something that we need to be.
And that in turn enables people staying in cars instead of embracing public transport, which is actually the other thing that you can do to really transform things.
Totally.
And if we were to make public transport free, well then, get a load of that.
Exactly. Hey, we're going to chat a little bit more broadly about the rest of the world now. You wanted to speak a wee bit about some sort of trends, I guess, that have been ongoing for a long time in the sort of populist politics that are happening globally. But in light of the things that Trump's been saying, these racist tweets he's made basically about congresswomen in the US sort of sparked, I guess, another look at this conversation about how you know, is the way our politicians are interacting with, I guess, like the online world and also the way that they're sort of interacting with the media. It's crossing all these lines that haven't really been crossed for a long time, I guess, in such an obvious way.
My heart has been sinking lately, watching more and more and more of it pile up, and it sort of crystallized with Putin saying that this is actually, that he sees the tide going out on liberal democracy.
Well,
I forget
the exact
expression he used, but and you can see it that way. You know, in somewhere between the 70s and the turn of the century, you saw the number of what you would call liberal democracies rise from about 30 or so to about 130 or so. This is according to Francis Fukuyama, who wrote The End of History a couple of decades ago. That is arguably receding, and he makes that argument,
mm-hmm.
And in support of that, he points to places like Turkey and Hungary, where you've got these authoritarian strongmen.
Yep.
And paraphrasing wildly, he says that this is partly because people feel that they their identity is being eroded and, mm-hmm. and their country's identity is being eroded. It's nothing to do with money.
Mm-hmm.
That means that it's somebody like Trump, somebody like Putin, somebody like Orban, is that his name, of Hungary, by saying our way of life, our nation is being undermined, you mm-hmm. know, and being disrespected, that brings you large support. And so what Trump tweeted this week is all of a piece with that. It's saying yeah. it's denying the other, and it's actually asserting your own self, you know, the idea that you as a white, and it's usually middle-aged male, but also a white person who grew up with a certain perspective of white supremacy, now feels distinctly uncomfortable and is lashing out in the most unpalatable ways.
Mm.
And it's just goddamn awful.
It is,
And, you know, in the very long sweep of history, humanity keeps improving itself and perfecting itself. But in the short term, it's actually, the graph is actually sawtoothed.
Yeah.
And so we could be looking at 10, 20, 50 years, a lifetime of this kind of turn away from liberal democracy to embracing authoritarianism and xenophobia and intolerance and hatred. And God save us all.
Yeah. Well, there's good people fighting the good fight out there as well.
Yeah.
Thankfully. Thanks, David, for chatting to us this morning. We will see you in a couple of weeks' time, I'm sure.
Will do. Cheers, Rachel.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.